session number 28197, Reel 2.
Reel 2. Let's just go back to the initial training. How long was that for? How long were you actually training on the duck?
A month.
A month, and that's all you had?
A month's training. And in that month's training, we had to learn the Navy signals with the flags, and we tried to learn Morse code, which was very difficult. We never did get that audio signal. When he went into the room, in the end of the room, there was a little light, and they used to flash it on and off at Morse code, and then we hadn't got a clue what it but other than that, wasn't that. And we wore a jacket, or no, there was no pants on it, just an overall, by the way, down, what the Navy wore while we was on the duck training.
Was there any special equipment you had to carry with the duck itself?
The only special equipment we had to carry was their grease guns. They were maintenance very, very strict, and every time you come out of the water, you had to go underneath and here and grease the prop shaft and all that. They told us there that duck can save your life. If you don't do these things, then you're in trouble.
And there are no sort of little quirks with the duck itself?
No, not at all.
Nothing sort of went always wrong with it, or was it just so...
No, they were very good. In actual fact, I'd had mine 18 months, I suppose. This particular point, I started having trouble... The sluggish engine, and I reported it to the officer in charge, who was in convoy. And on this particular run, I was all so far away, there was a long distance between the mate and the first convoy and us, and the other people behind us. And the captain said to us, "Well, look, you take this lot, we'll go on." And they had to rendezvous to a place where we had our cards. And the signpost was what they call the club route. There was a club, diamond, a spade route on the trees. Whatever route you was given, you followed this one, whoever he was. Anyway, we were going on there, and on the Sunday morning, we arrived at the rendezvous at 6 o'clock. And the main party who we left this early had never arrived till 11. They got lost in the road somewhere, so we did very well indeed. But from there onwards, we went on, and then going along, there was all the mighty bang, and that was the end of that, and the engine packed up and everything else. So I was taken in tow then. They towed us to where we had to unload our stores, and then they took us back again to the camp, where then took over another duck while they swapped the engine over into my one, and then I had it back again. But the weather was the oil pump had seized up. That was the trouble of it.
Okay. So basically you finished basic training, and what unit were you then assigned to after
that? Well, once we finished our duck training, in actual fact, we were just hanging about until the invasion came on.
Were you with any particular unit then?
Yeah, no, we were still in the we was attacked when we went to Normandy. We was attached to the 3rd Canadian Division, mm-hmm. So we was with them with the Canadians all everywhere they went. We were in there with them.
And were you doing any pre-training prior to D-Day itself?
They called it a commando course. We were taken to a camp and did a bit of training. I forget the officer's name. He was a New Zealander, and he was a gas man mad. You'd be sitting in your billet, and he'd put a lob of gas bomb in or something like this. But when we went in the field, we were told to make ourselves scarce, and then somebody come out and find you. And then the next day, one of the worst days of all, they took us through a wood. We had to wear gas masks, our rifles, pack. We ran through this wood. Oh, this was lovely. Jumping over barbed wire and what have you. That was first. And then we did a second run. But the second run, they put the gas mask, they put the gas on. And unfortunately, with no gas mask, I jumped and I tripped over the barbed wire and I got full wall of gas. And I was very queer then. And they took me back to the camp. And then they said, well, leave it for a couple of hours to see how you are. And if you're no better, then we'll take you to hospital. But luckily enough, after a couple of hours, I began to feel okay. But it was a terrible experience. That when you'd never realise what tear gas or other gas would do to you. But that was the only training we ever had. And the other part was, in during that training, we went out into a field with our bayonets and testing for digging for mines, because they said if you did it in mine, you'd go up. And there was trip wires, so if you found a trip wire, you put your hand up and that'd come in and then mark off for you on the chart. So then that was actually only training we ever had until we got to know. We never knew what a war was or fighting was at all.
Did you have any weapons training at all?
Sorry?
Did you have any weapons training?
Yes, we went down to Purfleet Rifle Range. Where we had Lee Enfield rifles, and we went down there and went onto the rifle range. And it's rather funny because the corporal said to me, when you fire at the target, shut your eyes and fire, because they had a competition on who was the best shot and they were going to win a prize. Well, unfortunately, one of the chappies who won a prize, he did very well, Ken Hobbs. The next time I saw him, he was in the 43rd Infantry Division in Holland, because what they'd done, they picked all the good shots out and they put them in the infantry. So that was, and the other one was a Lewis gun, they had the pan on there. And you fired the Lewis gun, but that was the only weapons training we had.
On the duck itself, did you actually carry any weapons? Or?
Yeah, we always carried it. We had a Sten gun with 20 rounds of ammunition. And lucky enough, when I demobbed, I still had my gun and 20 rounds of ammunition.
And that was the same one you were issued?
And you weren't allowed to use any ammunition at all until it was ordered to by the officer.
And there were no other weapons at all?
No, we had no other weapons at all, no.
Okay. What sort of kit would you carry on the duck itself?
In actual fact, all our kit bag stuff, of all our clothing, what have you, was in the bilge down the bottom here and in there. We kept that all in there. So the only thing we stood up in was your clothes and our shaving kit and that stuff like that. But otherwise, we had all our kit was in the bottom of the duck.
So it was totally self-sufficient.
So everywhere you went, you were fully mobile, sort of thing.
Yeah. Going back to the Canadian unit you was with, what sort of people were they? I mean,
well, the lads.
Yeah.
Well, they were all majority of them were Londoners. They were good. We had a good crowd, especially in the duck company. It was all a very good crowd and very good friends, and the comradeship was fantastic.
And what were the officers like?
The officers were very, they are two of them. One actually fact, the first one, starting with the top, Major Badger, he was wicked. He came from a school, he was a school rep somewhere at Hammersmith, in a private school. And he treated us like a lovely school kids. He was anything mad, he was always on charge. He was a wicked man, he was. And then we had Captain Wildsmith. He was an ex-guards officer, a big, full-pecked belly, and used to wobble along, flop, flop, flop. But the two we had was John Boxall, Major Lieutenant Boxall. He was a regular. He was a fantastic officer. He would never do anything himself. He would never ask you to do anything that he wouldn't do himself. And, it was fantastic. And Captain Burgum, he was the officer in charge. So we had Captain Burgum, and John Boxall. There were two officers in our unit. And of course, then you had the major to look on. But they were very, very good.
You just talked about the sort of officer structure of your company. How was the old company actually sort of structured? How many ducks did you have?
The company split up into four platoons, A, B, C, and workshop, and each platoon had 33 ducks. So in all together, you had virtually 100 ducks in the whole company. But they were split up all the time, so you never knew where B platoon or C platoon were. You just had a platoon and you took your job on the A platoon. Until any big jobs, the only big job we were all in together was when we was on the Scilt, on the Walkland Islands, because the whole operation there, we worked together.
Can you just go through that operation itself?
Well, on the Walkland Islands, we went to a place called Box Chapelle. It's not Box Chapelle, now it's called Volgensvord. They changed the name in 1957. But there we went from there, up on the land here, on sea. That was the main, they call that the Scheldt Sea. But that was the North Sea in actual fact. And to there, and then we went up from there.
Where's that you actually landed?
And that was to Goes.
And what was the distance that actually was, we're
that,
going?
That distance, the road, the water distance was 8 miles.
And how long did that take you?
We did one trip a day, that's all we could do. The duck would do 3-4 mile in the water, 4 mile an hour. So that was at least over 2 hours in the water. And then you had to go up to the Goes and then come back again. And on one particular time, we came down here, and this is a tidal wave. So we were stuck in the river there for 6 hours and had to wait for the tide to come up before we could salt off again. And one particular time, we had a force 9 gale, and we still had to operate. And when we were loaded up, we was loaded up with ammunition and food, and going along, the waves had come, and as the waves came over, you would go up, and then they go down again. And this was that we would sat in the driver's seat with our life jacket and Mae West. You wet yourself in, and that was about one of the worst jobs we ever did. That was, but with that, you gained after that. You gained fantastic confidence in the duck. You knew very well then that it would do it. That would do anything, and it proved it there, because on that particular day the minesweepers packed up, and we didn't know then. I didn't know till 1984-85 when I went down to Paignton and Devon with a colleague, and being as my Tony Bertram, he lived near Plymouth, we went to see him for the day, and he told me then that this was mined. Nobody told us before. I won't tell you what he told me, but that was it. But that was the worst. That was the worst part of all the water jobs we did, all the sea crossings we did. That was the worst one ever.
And how long did that go on for?
Well, actually, in fact, we started off on October the 26th or 27th. And unfortunately, October the 30th, I was taken into hospital because I had internal bleeding. And then I think it was about 4 or 5 days after, it lasted for about a week. That was all. And then you'd carry on to do something else.
What was the cause of the internal bleeding?
That they never told you. In actual fact, I got my medical records upstairs, because when they said that all the secret parts had come out again, then I wrote them in. And on it, it's definitely, on there it states that the medical officers were not allowed to discuss your medical condition with the patient or his relatives. So when you went into a hospital, you had no idea what was wrong with you when you went in or when you came out.
Now going back, prior to D-Day itself, you've been Did you actually do any training with the Canadians itself, or
no?
Were you just...
And then we went. We finished up from the south coast. We finished up at Bellas Park in Averley in Essex. Now that was in the big cage, so we drove the vehicles down and left them on the sides of the road, and then we was in the camp and encamped in there, and we would have been there about 3 days, and then the Canadians came in, and they were just by us, and that's the first, because they came in, they started digging slit trenches, and we thought, well, what the hell do you want a slit trench for? But we didn't, we know, because we were completely useless, we were. But anyway, that was, and then on the Whitsun Saturday, we went down to Tilbury, and our ducks were loaded onto the LST, landing ship's tank, and we set sail then on the Saturday, and on the Tuesday, whilst at sea, on the Tuesday, the officer called us downstairs into the boat and the LST and said that the landings had started in Normandy, and we were going in as soon as our pitch was clear. Well, C platoon, they went in the same day, but we didn't go in until the Wednesday afternoon, because where the Canadians, where we were, they were fighting the 21st Panzer Division, and they didn't get the ground wasn't cleared until afternoon of Wednesday afternoon. Then we went in to take they dropped off the LST, and then we went ashore, and then started unloaded our goods, and came back to the area where we were landed.
So what were you, going back to when the officer told you what was going on, obviously this is sort of your first sort of real frontline combat experiences, so what was your initial thoughts of what was going to happen?
Well, we hadn't got a clue, natural friend, or they just said that the invasion had started, and we hadn't got had got no idea what we'd expect when we got there, anything at all, as they, but when we come in, on the Wednesday afternoon, we left the LST, and they said there was two church spires, and you've got to go into the centre of them. Well, unfortunately, due to the tide, the heavy water, we were well right to the right of one of these churches, and we finished up at Arromanches. So we got onto the road there, and they'd built, over a canal, they'd built a Bailey Bridge. That Bailey Bridge is still there today. Anyway, that's how we come to join. We load, unloaded, and then we come back into our area by the beach, where we were told then to dig slip trenches to go in into.
What was the sort of first sort of supplies you were taking ashore?
I think we had water and food, oil and food. It was split up into different lots. But all the stuff, it was oil, water and ammunition. But this is what you were allowed to do, unload from the ships.
And what day was this? Sorry, just to reiterate that. You actually landed on the...
We landed on the Wednesday, on the 7th.
And was there much fighting still going on around the area?
No, it's rather strange. It was very, very queer, because they told us that the invasion started the day before. When we got into land, apart from gunfire further away, it was very, very strange. They seemed to be very, very quiet. And the only thing then you realised it was something was wrong was when you saw the sheep with the cattle with a leg stuck up near land, dead in the fields. And that night we had, I think they had one of the heaviest air raids, because they told us that Jerry hadn't got any aircraft. But that particular night we had a big air raid. We had 11 killed, 35 wounded, and pretty well all the ducks were put out of action, because he dropped butterfly bombs that when they went everywhere.
And this was the night of the 7th.
That was the first night we ever got. So we thought, oh my God, this is the first night. What's tomorrow night going to bring? But anyway, that day they made us dig deeper in the hole. And they told us then, when you dug your slit trench, you've got to dig a bit out so you could wedge yourself under it in case anything happened. And we were like that for the first week. And then...
Did you actually do any sort of supply runs that first week, or were you just stuck on the
route? No, no, no. From the Thursday morning, as the vehicles were repaired, and the workshop did a marvellous job. They repaired all the bit. All the vehicles were repaired by dinner time.
Well, all the vehicles knocked out on that air raid.
Well, all they had shrapnel in that, so there was a question of patching the holes up. And then you went down to the shore, and what they called the beach group master, he would give you a name of a ship. So you went out to that ship, and then you loaded up whatever they had, whether it was ammunition, bombs, food, water, oil. You loaded up. You took it back to the base at the camp, unloaded, and then went out again. And we started at the first on the Friday. We started off probably Friday, because it was double summer time. We were woken up at 3:30. The sergeant major used to come round with a barge pole and poke your hole out, get you going. By the time we got to sea, it was daylight. It was 4 o'clock, 4:30, and then you worked on. The last one to leave the ship was 11 o'clock at night. So you got to shore at 11:30 as it was getting dark.
What did you mean by double summertime?
Well, in here, like instead of now, I think it was in April, May, you had your summer, your clock time went, your summer time went, and then in May or June, they put another extra hour forward. So instead of being 11 o'clock then, it was 12. So you got, in the morning, you was up that much earlier, you started to work much earlier, that was during the wartime, double summer time was. And so you was in, say, 3:30, 4 o'clock, you started work. And in one report, in actual fact, I've got it in there somewhere, the Major Badger, he commended the company on the fact that although we were working nearly 20 hours a day, we had no accidents. And that was fantastic. Although you were dead tired, you had a 4 hour sleep, that was all, you only got 4 hours sleep. And then you carried on, and you were just like a taxi rank. As the ducks went out the side of the ship, as you was loaded up, another one to take, and that's how you came all the way through.
Were you actually taking anything from the shore to the ships itself?
No, it was all from the ship to the shore.
And how long were you actually doing this for?
Until July. About the middle of July, things eased up a bit then, although you were still operating out there. But then you was detailed to other companies like Royal Engineers and so forth, and working with them. But the main supply lot was about the end of July. Then in August, the 20th, when they broke through Caen and started out, then we moved off to other places.
Were there any other attacks to you on the beach?
One particular evening, it was Jerry broke through, and we had a couple of airburst shells coming over. But other than that, we weren't too bad. We were pretty.
And were any damage occurred from that?
No, not with our lot. Then there's on the church spire. I suppose we've been there about a week, and then there was snipers in the evening. We had the snipers come up, and they found then that it was the snipers were coming from the church spire. So there's a big debate going on whether the ship or whether one of the tanks fired and blew the top off the turret of the ship. And there they found a German and a French woman tied to the rafters.
Right, and what actually?
They were firing. They were sniping against us.
Hmm. And what actually took them out? Was it the tank or the ship itself?
Sorry?
Did the tank attack the church or was it the ship?
We still can't find out definitely actually whether it was the ship had fired the tank, the ship had fired the shell, or the tank had fired the shell. And that's still going on now.
Okay. Was there any other sort of sniping going on?
No, we were the only snipers. It wasn't snipers. One particular point, when we were down on a detector company, we was in detector and engineer company. One particular evening I was sent out, the officer came up and said we wanted urgently to go on the towards the front line, and we'd been on the road about an hour, I suppose, and then the tracer bullet started to come up to us, and we thought, oh, hello, are we going to miss them or we're not? But luckily enough we were a bit lower down, so we got away with it. But that was the most important thing, you know, the thing that was the most important of all or not.